On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute that millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.
So welcome back to the Bogeyman Golf Podcast, hosted by Michael and Johnny. Johnny, we have juice for, I think, originally for the first time this year, we have a proper golf tournament. The Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill.
I think there's only
one place to start.
Well, where's that with Jake Knapp's 12, is it? Your inspiration is letting you down. The mullet lets you down, and the mangy dog had a bath.
No, the only thing he will say is like he went like it. That's just golf. That's like he obviously won, had a decent week the next one, then he hits a 12 and a par 5, and then actually finishes that round with the kind of he has two birdies in his back nine. But it's just no, I love that. I love that he ended up hitting a 12.
Sure you do.
Still in the Jake Knapp fan club massively.
Are you going to just like maintain the mullet now? Just going to shave it back a little bit more and just kind of let it keep growing on top, but keeping it tight on the sides, are you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting so many mixed reports on it. There's people are like telling me they actually want to vomit when they look at me. And then there's other people going, I like it. I think it's nice. But I think it's, you know, when you do Movember and people tell you, oh yeah, it kind of suits you. But like if I had a mustache in June, I think it would just, the people wish we'd look at it.
Yeah. Oh, you grow the mullet for charity. No. Just liked it. Oh, okay. Right. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah.
And it takes a lot of like, I don't know. There's a lot of maintaining with it, which I'm not too fond of.
How is there maintenance to it? Just shave the sides. Surely that's the whole point of it.
Because it's long on top, so it can go everywhere. So you have to like comb it, and then you have to like brush the top of the sides back. Anyway.
Yeah, we have to do a video of yourself playing, trying to break 90 for our YouTube and social channels. So I really want you to have the mullet for that, just because it'd be just so funny. It would just look so ridiculous.
Look at that guy playing Paris Court East with the camera and a mullet. What the hell is going on as I'm hooking and shanking things? Like, what the hell's going on?
Paris Court might revoke our membership after that. They'd be like, yeah, we don't want you guys here anymore. You're okay. You guys can go back to wherever you came from.
Get out.
Really. Yeah. Right. Well, listen, let's get into Bay Hill. Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, proved why Joaquin Niemann is not world number one.
Yeah, I'm happy to hold my hands up. But I think maybe for the day, what did I say? It was the 4th of March. I said, yeah, he was the best player in the world maybe for that day after. Probably a bit short-sighted, but man, he was just, Scottie was so good.
I'll give you this, right? Niemann is definitely a top 10 player in the world.
Yeah, I think you probably, now I think it's, you said it as well, you're not sure the Masters will suit Niemann in his game, which I definitely think I would probably agree with you on that. But yeah, I think he's on form, he's probably definitely the best in top 10. But
like, again, he's better, like, so top 10 is Scheffler, Rory, Ram, Hovland, Wyndham, Xander, Cantlay, Homa, Brian Harman, and Ludwig. Like, Niemann's definitely playing better than Ludwig and Brian Harman. Like, Ludwig was playing in the opposite field event on the PGA Tour this week. Xander Schauffele has gone on a little bit of a cooler as well. Like, I think from kind of six down in that top 10 ranking would change a lot if Niemann was in there. Like, Wyndham Clark is in number 5. He's playing brilliantly. Victor Hovland is
still okay.
But he's still, yeah. Roy McIlroy is still number 2, and that's obvious. Yeah. Scottie Scheffler is way in by far. Like, it's not even close how much better he is than everyone else right now. And then John Rahm's number 3. But I think, like, the case could be made that, like, Niemann will be anywhere from 4 to 10 in the world. Like, you could convince me now he's a better golfer. He's definitely a better golfer at this moment than Victor Hovland.
Yeah, but I think that's what we have to. I think that's really something we kind of have to look at, because there's so many tours, because there's elevated events, there's lads not playing. So it has to be like right now, there's no argument that Scottie Scheffler is the best player in the world. I don't think anyone who watches any type of golf is going to argue that. But next week, Rory could shoot the lights out and win the Players. And then it's like, oh, no, okay, now Rory is the best. Do you know what I mean? Like, it has to be. Like if Scotty's putting Woods come back next week and Rory just catches fire, now we have an argument. So it's, whereas before, because everyone's on the PGA Tour, you can have a little bit more week by week and stuff, but I think it has to be very short-sighted to say who it is, in my opinion. Anyway.
Yeah, I think Scott, like, geez, you could forgive Scotty like one or two bad weeks. I think like from the amount of events and stuff that he's played, I saw a crazy stat there on Twitter earlier today, where like, I think he's 520 under par since he's become world number one, which is just like ridiculously, like it's not even close how much better than everyone else he is for that. I think he's had like 33 top tens, like 21 top threes during that time as well. Like he is just like unbelievably consistent. And the fact that he hasn't been able to putt for the last, what, year, means that like he just hasn't won. I'd say he hasn't won like four or five more times. I think it's crazy that's only his seventh tour title. Like that's how good he is. Is you're like, he should have way more wins.
Yeah, like I think like the biggest comment I think we can give him is that his stats are Tiger-esque. And like, you know, you I love that. You know, you see a tournament comes on and then they throw up some like, oh, the last, look at these stats, and it's like Tiger's 1, 2, 3, someone else is in at 4, Tiger's 5, 6, 7, 8. Like like, you know, Scotty's well up there. And I actually, like, I really enjoyed watching him play last night. Like I jumped in out of it during the weekend or on kind of Friday, I'd see little bits of highlights or whatever. But Sunday, I sat down to watch him. And I think what you said before, especially from the Netflix season one, that there was nothing in Scotty you kind of got at. You were like, so bland. And then you made the joke, like, he's probably just eats vanilla ice cream. But I think he was enjoyable. I don't know whether it's because I was seeing if his putting would hold up and there was an extra thing to it, or I started to feel sorry for him and I wanted him to win because it was like how the man is kept mentally okay with all this time and it putting, like, you know. So I think there was a little bit more to him. I also like the beard. I think it. I think the beard on him doesn't make him as look as like clean cut and choir boy perfect. I think he went mad at one stage as well. You know, I've heard that he let out a couple of sweat. Like I'd like that a little bit more to him, you know. But I was definitely rooting for him, and I was rooting for him. I thought the minute I thought Shane wasn't going to win, I kind of switched my support to Scotty.
Yeah, I think I was pretty much the same. When Shane went over par through the front nine, I was just like, all right, I just don't want Wyndham to win, because there's just something about him that Wyndham Clark, like, he's in the Netflix series for season two, which like we'll get into in another podcast. But I like Scotty, and I like his story. I know, obviously, I said he's very boring, but
He's still boring.
But I think you're dead right that in the last month, when like everyone's been talking about the putting, even Rory being in the commentary booth, being like, he needs to just switch to a mallet and just have a look at that, which, by the way, he then does and then goes and wins. Like, the fact that everyone was talking about it around him, it became such a big story that, like, you're dead right. When he was on like 10 or 11, you're like, is this going to hold up now for another round? But actually, his putting got increasingly better throughout the four rounds. Like, he was, I think, like 3.93 strokes gained in the final round of the tournament in comparison to the field, which is like, that's outrageous, man. Like, from where he was coming from, where he was nearly losing like four strokes per round, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So to have that such a big turnaround, maybe it's a flash in the pan, but like, there was definitely an added excitement. You're like, okay, is this gonna hold up? I mean, I think he was like 144th in strokes gained putting going into this week, and then just turned that around in such an impressive fashion. It was good to watch. I'm very happy for him. I think he was a good winner. He's obviously won this event before, but I would have liked if someone, namely Shane, put a bit more pressure on him, or actually just put like any pressure on him.
Like, I think the thing with like even turning to the mallet, I think I don't think he was like people are saying, oh, look, he just switched putters and that was it. Like he's been grinding on his putting. And I remember someone on Twitter put up two pictures side by side and was just saying what they noticed in his putting. And the first thing that came to me was the angle of his bend from his waist over was way straighter in the new way of putting. So I don't know. Listen, I'm not pretending I'm an expert in anything like this, but he looked stronger in that position. And when you showed the old way, he was a little bit more kind of bent and hunched. So there's obviously little things that obviously he's fixed as well in it. But I think you're right. It looked like the minute his confidence came with the putter, Oh, we're grounded, we're good.
Yeah,
you know, it got better and better the whole way. So I think it'll be interesting coming into a major, even next week. If Scotty gets in the hunt again next week, I think we're all going, is the putter hold up? And it probably makes him that little bit now more exciting than just because, like, obviously the fairway green put whatever now it's like he could lose this. He could be on the back line of a major now with five holes to play and brain it. Because the putting could go. And I think at least that gives it some excitement.
Yeah, that would be good. I mean, like, oof, I know I'd have him back to win the US Open, but the way he's playing right now, you'd nearly back him to win the Masters again. And like, that would be amazing. But again, you're dead right. Like, how well does his putting hold up now when there is a bit of pressure applied? Like, if Rory or John Rahm of the Masters are throwing darts and hitting them in really, really, really close, and Scotty keeps giving himself these like longer putts to try and make for birdie, how long can the putting hold up before you just go to like just revert back to type and just get nervous and fall back into old habits? And you know, the new mechanics that he's working on, how long before they kind of show cracks? But I mean, look, I not that you ever root for someone to have those kind of cracks or something like that, but that would be great drama to see him kind of. We love to watch people rise. And then we'd love to watch them fall and watch the drama and unfold with that. But I think, yeah, I don't know. I think he seems to have it kind of sorted now, the putting. I know, obviously, that's really rash to say after one good week. We'll see how it holds up. Maybe this week, like going into the players, he'll just be exhausted because he's been working so hard on it. And it has been a while since his last win. I say a while, it's been a few months since his last win. But it was such a storyline that like he must emotionally be just shattered now, go home that night after winning the tournament and just be like, okay, thank God we can kind of put things to rest and we can shut people up a little bit about the putting because we've won here now, we've done it. Like, does that emotionally just drain you going into the players next week, and will he just melt?
Yeah, so you're buying Scottie Scheffler stocks
overall? Yeah, for sure, 100%.
Okay. Like, you're selling your Bitcoin and buying Scheffler stocks.
Yeah, sure. Any Bitcoin I have, yeah, I'll buy Scottie Scheffler stocks. I mean, I already said he's going to win a major. I think I'm just way more confident that he's going to win a major this year. What about you?
Like, I'm not fully back that his putting is back. I think it's something that can come and go very easily. And if you're, I think he was so bad, and then now I think he was so good Sunday, especially. Like, I think, was the stats he made, was it like, was he made 16 out of 16 putts inside 15 feet? Like, that alone, that was Sunday. Like, that was incredible. So, to me, to jump from, like, I was probably a better putter than him, to go being arguably the best on tour, I think that could move again, and I'd be worried about that. But having said that, like, you watch, every time I watch him swing, I know, like, we haven't talked about his ball striking, but the way he moves his feet, I'm waiting for a hook and a snap and a slice and the stuff, but obviously it's not going to happen. But this is quickly. So again, I find watching him really entertaining on Sunday, and I really enjoyed watching him, which I was surprised at, because I wasn't as heavy as you in the camera on him being annoying and bland, but I could 100% see where you were coming from.
Yeah. Let's talk Shane. So is third place a good result? Like, he was obviously very, very happy about it, given his start to the year. But should he be, basically, is an existential question.
Yeah, like, it's a tough one. Like, he's so hot and cold, and I think that when he's good, he needs to convert. because I think we all accept he's going to be streaky. And as in, Nick, you had a few stats, was it last week, that he wins every 3 years or whatever. And I think, what's his third? What does third get him? Keeps him on form, but he's not a, like, yeah, he probably hit it well. He put himself close. Didn't really challenge Scotty.
Yeah.
He was with him. You know, I was hoping that there was going to be a bit of a battle between them. If he had come second and just try and laid a couple of gloves even early on Scotty, I think we'd all be way happier than his end. But listen, it's not the end of the world, and I'd much rather see him up third, fourth, fifth, sixth than sometimes when he's very near the cut line.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Andrew Fitzgerald got in touch with us on Twitter asking if we go into like Shane's week a little bit more. He basically feels that Shane was too happy to be involved rather than disappointed they lost the tournament, which I can understand that. I think there's a pretty strong case for that, to be honest, like less so than last week where like at the Cognizant, like Shane was the big name. I said this a few times, Shane was the big name going into the final round. He was the one that like people were looking at to go out and win the tournament. It was his tournament to lose essentially last week at the Cognizant, and he lost it. This week he came up against Scotty Scheffler, who's like just by far the best player in the world, and you can see how much better Scotty is than everyone. But compare like Shane to Rory, who are like this, what we love to do from an Irish perspective. Rory was angry with his performance today. Now, to be fair, Rory played a hell of a lot worse than Shane today. I think Rory was like, what, 4 over, 5 over for the day, 4 over, where Shane shot even par. But like Rory took his anger out. He like smashed the tee marker on one of the holes after he missed a fairway. We didn't see any kind of frustration from Shane from not landing any hits on Scotty early on in the round. And then like, he just kind of just looked excited and happy to finish in third, which like I don't want that from any of our like players. Like poor Rickard Harrington's exact same whenever he plays, and if he has a bad Sunday finishing and he finishes in third, he knows that like he gave that one away. And Rory's the exact same. Like once Scotty started to pull away, I felt that Shane started to play in for position, because Shane was like, he played like a man who knew exactly what was on the line. He knew that if he finishes in the top five, he's back inside the top 50 in the world, and that's going to get him into the signature events for the year. And that's going to just give him so much more financial security, so much more finances to just earn and to just make way more money. Like he stopped attacking pins, which kind of that annoyed me a little bit from Shane's side. Like on the front nine, on the par three, I think it was like two holes into it, nearly had a hole in one. And you're like, all right, so he's attacking pins, right? This is how we're going. We're going at it. We're going to give Scotty a good run for his money. And then kind of come like 15. So then, yeah, when he got to 17 on the second last hole, the par three, Shane just played for position, just going to the middle of the green, give himself a nice little chip up and down to make par. Whereas you kind of want him to attack those pins a bit more and do that like all through all 18 holes. Whereas I think like you could see he was nearly fighting and get with Wyndham Clark more than he was with Scotty Scheffler. I think he was fighting with Wyndham for what, 400 grand or so to finish in second place or tied for second, rather than trying to take down Scotty. And I think that's the difference between Shane and Rory, is like Rory will try the shot to claim in first place. But if that shot doesn't pay off and he finishes in 20th, fair enough. That's a risk he's willing to take. Whereas Shane looked like yesterday a man who wasn't willing to take that risk.
Yeah, he bogeyed 1, 2, and 7. Do you think he just turned and was like, it's just, I don't have that game in me today to fire at pins and really go gung ho. Do you know? Early on, he probably felt, It's just one of those days that I'm not going to go really low. You know, it's just, you know, middle of the green is a good thing because I'm just not on it. With the subway frustration, like I think it can depend really on the person. I always say this, so even when I'm coaching like young fellas or whatever, I'm coaching school, I'll say like, if they get annoyed, they moan at the ref or whatever. If you took the aggression out of Roy Keane, he wasn't the Roy Keane. He was nowhere near as good. So you live with the sendings off. But if the aggression or everything frustration isn't making you better, well, then we have to get rid of it. Yeah. So like So with Shane, does the frustration, does it like with Rory or Ram, does it give them that release straight away and their mind snaps back in their next shot or next hole? If Shane allows the frustration to bubble over, does it actually become a hindrance? I don't know. Is he a better player when he's happy and doesn't matter? Oh, it's grand, it's cool. And very more chilled. And like, if he lets his frustration out, does he tense up and does he like start then putting more like emphasis on bad shots and he gets his own head a little bit more? Like,
Sure.
I don't know. So I know where you're going from because it's we're watching him and it's the absolute desire we have to watch him win. And because we know how good he is, and he's such a like, because we're all Shane fans, and it's that, come on, Shane, get it done, get it done. You're close, you're close. So I don't know him. He's so soul destroying sometimes. It's like you just want him to be, because you know how good he is, and you know he can win, and it's just, I think, yeah, I think it was more the fact that he kind of went out with a whimper on Sunday was more disappointing
Yes.
than anything else. And I think we'd all kind of forgive him if he had just tried, and even if he ended up coming sixth maybe or seventh. But isn't, I think he's what, I think he's 37 in the OWGR
Yeah.
now with that. And I think after 7 holes with 3 bogeys, it didn't look great, and he managed to go 3 birdies after that on Sunday. So I'd like to put it down that he just didn't have the juice and he wasn't feeling it. And he said, let's just get in steady Eddie here and figure out why I wasn't able to go gung ho. Because even like his like obviously his round one was what set him up. Like his back line was world class. And then after that he just kind of middled it a bit, you know, looking through a score set. So I'm gonna go with I think it's good. Obviously I want him to go in, but I think he's in a good spot. Every time I think of Shane when I think he's playing well, and this is when he was kind of even with Bo and he was happy and he was laughing and joking and things, life was maybe easy, you know, and the golf came easy. So maybe he's working on that, going, let's be in that zone and what comes, comes. But you know, man, he was an invite this week as well.
Yeah, that was like, I mean, it's what a brilliant use of an invite. He's obviously a MasterCard ambassador, and this tournament is sponsored by MasterCard. From their side, I say they were crossing their fingers and everything that he was gonna get it across the line and get the win himself. But what a way to make the use of the invite, because like we're saying, he's now inside the top 50. He's into the signature events for the next few weeks. I think it's for the rest of the year he's into those. So like, I don't want him to see it as like, right, cool, job done.
I agree.
We're going to cash out now here for the next 12 months. Like, and he's not like that, but you just don't want him to be like that. But so I do want to see Shane back it up with this week, even if he had like a top 10 or something like that at the players. That would be it would just show more signs of life. Whereas like, I think if he was to just kind of whimper and falter now for the next few weeks and just kind of play steady Eddie, like you're saying, like a couple of top 20s for the next 2 weeks. Then you'd be like, ah, oh, look, come on, we need a bit more juice from you.
Yeah, he does need a win. I think you're right. I think a win this year, and I'd even go a win on like in one of the big DP World Tour events. Like I think a win for Shane would be a very successful year. And I think now once I think if he's put himself in a good position, now he puts his foot down at a few events and target the courses he likes, you know. And I would like to see him in the hunt a bit.
Yeah, like he's going to be over at the Porsche Singapore Open Classic, Porsche Singapore Classic in 2 weeks' time. So like that would be a great place to see him just go over, play a DP World Tour event, get the win, do the classic, John Rahm playing the Mexico Open thing, go play, get a win, and like just build your confidence and just continue on from there. I'd love to see him do that. Now obviously he did that before he got into this event and before he has the signature events and stuff like that, now all locked up. So there's going to be a fair bit of travel, but I don't really care where he gets a win. If he just gets a win on either tour, that's just really, really positive signs of life, and just kind of gets him back into the habit of winning more regularly. Because he won the BMW PGA Championship last year, you kind of want him to just win more than every 2 or 3 years. I think we need to see him do it. Like he needs to be like Rory and just get a win every year, and just be like, that's the baseline. That's where we need to be, because like he's good enough for it, easily good enough.
he's not young.
No. You he's know, got maybe so, one more Ryder Cup in him.
Yeah, I'd love him to be really on form in that Ryder Cup. Like, he may be a win or two, like a lot of big finishes in the majors and stuff where it's not Willie, won't he? Shane's already in the grand, one of the big lads, and he has a big Ryder Cup. And then, you know, after that, then he can kind of pick and choose which all the course of season. But I think if I'm him, I'm putting the head down between now and then and trying to max out everything I've got. I think you're right, Joe.
Yeah. It was on a positive note. He is looking trim. I said this last week. He's obviously working with Robbie Cannon a lot, doing a lot of really, really good stuff. He's looking very well.
And his game is in good shape. There was nothing like worrying about it. Like, he was hitting well. The one where he asked everyone to quiet down. He had a little shout at the crowd. He went to go over the trees. It's a really cool hole at Bay Hills. The one with the road, is it the one with the road in front? I actually was going to say this to you. That would terrify me as a tee shot. Like, I don't know, like, the road's not in play, but it would be in my head. Like, it would absolutely terrify me. I'd end up hitting it out of the top of the driver and smashing through the little flowers. Right. He went to take, you know, he was confident enough to hit a fade over those trees. I just, like, I like when Shane has the confidence in his game when he's like that.
And yeah, you're dead right. His game overall is very, very good, and it's in a solid place. But I just want to see him. Yeah, just overall want to see him less like happy to take part and more I'm here to compete and here to win. But listen, we said last week in the podcast that you're a big Arnold Palmer fan. You love this event. You love Arnie. Go into it a little bit as to why you're more of like a Arnie's Army rather than a Jack Nicklaus's camp.
Yeah, I one of the biggest things, I think he's just, every time you watch anything old school with Arnie, like he oozes that kind of cool. I just think, like, I think there's certain people in the world have this kind of something extra that doesn't really make sense of what they have, but it's like whatever the it, or, you know, just has this charisma. I think like the likes of like a Mourinho has it, you know, Steve McQueen, these type of guys where you're just kind of drawn to them. And I think Arnie has it in absolute spades. I also kind of think that, like, coming from where he is, I think he was probably one of the first golfers not to be in the elite upper class of society that got in. And I think it just broke golf, that hold on it. You know, his dad being a groundsman, you know, and then a head pro, and then him coming in and having that life. And, you know, anyone who's watched even the greatest game ever played knows how big that was in America. And because he didn't come in with a chip on his shoulder, you know, which I think some people have, he came in that this is where he belonged and this is the way the world is moving now, and it's fine. And I'm not angry or anything. I'm going to hear him play. And I just love that about him. Like, even my favorite picture, I think it's at the Masters. I think they're waiting to tee off, and he's just standing there, and he's got a little cigarette in his hand, and it's like, it's like you're at the Masters, the big event, and he just looks so cool, so collected. He won in his rookie year when he came on. It was just, everything was kind of just chilled and easy for him. And some of his quotes are like unbelievable. Like, my favorite quote, and someone was going to bring up a while ago, and it just, to me, it's just like exactly what golf is. Like, golf is a deceptively simple and endlessly complicated. It satisfies the soul and frustrates the intellect. It is at the same time maddening and is without doubt the greatest game mankind has ever invented.
You wouldn't get away with saying that today.
But my point is, I don't think you get away with saying it before, like in earlier on. Like, no offense to Shane. If Shane came out and said that, Evan was like, Shane, what the hell are you talking about? Like, you're not the terms of chops. But it's because Arnie has he had this charisma and this stuff to people went, oh, yeah. Like, Rory said it, like, Rory, you're a loser. Can you hand the mic back to someone else? Like, but I think he just oozed this coolness. And like, even I ran through a couple of the things, like, from his stats. Like, he's won 7 majors, 62 PGA Tour titles. He won 22 Ryder Cup matches. He captained USA twice to 2 victories. He has a drink named after him, for God's sake, you know. Even going into his fashion that he wore, some people would, like, have clothes that, like, you know, if that just, they make clothes look cool, and they just wear them right. And if someone else wears them, they look like an idiot. Yeah, so with Arnie, like the cardigan, I love the fact you get a cardigan a little bit. To me, that is, it's probably one of the reasons if I was a pro, I'd really want to win that tournament. I think it's a really nice kind of homage to him. And I think he saw golf is exactly the way we all want to see it. Like the other one he says is, what other people find in poetry, I find in the flight of a good drive. Anyone who plays golf at any level, no matter what handicap, when you hit a good shot, and you middle it and it comes off the beautiful and you're just looking at it in the sky, you actually see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
Within that. And he's just such a cool guy. He was such a cool guy.
Yeah. I think like for me, you're dead right with the Steve McQueen comparison. Like he was kind of like golf's, not, he wasn't like a bad boy, but he was kind of golf's bad boy for a time where he, obviously himself, Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player were the three biggest names in golf, and they all represented very different things and priorities in golf at that time. But I didn't really call him Steve McQueen there, but Arnold Palmer was seen as All-American, you know, he was seen as like essentially the American dream where you can grow up and you can do whatever it is you want. And a lot of people resonated with him for that. I think when Jack Nicklaus first came out in the scene, because Arnie was the oldest of the three of them, when Jack first came out in the scene, the two of them didn't get on at all. They had a tough rivalry between the two of them because they both had like very different like styles of play, but also personalities and priorities in life. And Jack has like spoken previously about how he hated to play with Arnie because just everyone was cheering for him. He was just the most popular player in the world. He's kind of, it's kind of like what I imagine playing with Tiger is like, you know. And Tiger obviously took it to a new level as like the world changed and became more globalized and the sport became more popular. But like, I imagine it's the same as if you're like, do you remember the US Open? Wyndham Clark was he went on and won, and he spoke about how he was the least popular of the three guys in contention. There was Ricky there and there was Roy there, and everyone was cheering for either of those two guys. No one was cheering for Wyndham. I imagine like Jack Nicklaus, when he was talking about it, that's what the way he felt, whereas he was like, I'm the underdog here. Like no one is supporting me and no one roots for me, because like Arnold was just so popular, like everyone loved him. And then that just carried on through generations. He went from being like a very cool, like young, handsome, fit looking person to like the grandfather of golf before kind of even before Jack did, because obviously the age thing. And then he kind of moved into that cardigan era and like wearing the like the Paddington Bear red cardigan. But yeah, a really cool story.
He made that cardigan look cool, you know, with it. And even if you, when you see the lads lift the trophy, someone's doing the cardigan, you're like, you look like an idiot. Like Arnie could pull that off and you can't. But do you know what I mean?
And like a great example, that's Tyrrell Hatton. Remember Tyrrell won that? He honestly looked like Paddington Bear because he's a little bit rounder and stuff like that. You know, cardigans are a slim man's fashion item. Like, but a very cool example of just how iconic Arnold Palmer was in 2019, the year after Rory won at Bay Hill, won Arnold Palmer. For the first round of the tournament, himself and Nike got together to like as part of an ad campaign, and there's like an iconic photo of Arnold wearing like a navy blue top and like a yellow kind of beige-ish trousers, and Rory wore that for the first round just as like an ode to someone that, you know, he knew. Obviously Rory's a big golf history fan and history buff, but it was just like a little tribute to one of the game's greatest. And I think if you're able to influence that level of golfer and that level of generation, you've done something pretty cool when it comes to the game of golf. And like, I don't think there's going to be anyone else like Arnie. Like, maybe culturally, you're going to have like kids from Japan wearing yellow because of Hideki and Matsuyama, or like it's like us and our generation wearing Tiger red and stuff like that. But like, Arnie was the first, you know.
Yeah, there's like another, like, I love this about him. Like, I only found this out like not that long ago, but he had a fear of flying, right? Didn't like flying. But basically, to overcome his fear of flying, he decided he was going to go and become a pilot.
That's cool.
So he like learned how to fly a plane and chalked up hours and became a pilot. And then they got rid of his fear of flying. Like, to me, if that doesn't tell you what he was like playing golf, like, nothing else will. Like.
Yeah, fearless. Like, yeah, he's a good, like, we talk about this a lot and we lament about this in the podcast a good bit these days, that like golf doesn't have personalities, or all the personalities have gone over to Liv. Mm. We need more guys with like the charisma and character and personality of what Arnold Palmer did for the PGA Tour. Because remember, also, like, Arnold Palmer was part of the guys that set up the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and I think there's a big talk about lads saying what they'd like the best 100 players in the world and stuff. And like, I don't want to get into that. I just think it's the most ridiculous, stupid idea I've ever heard. Like, it's the whole point of the PGA is a Jake Knapp can come from nowhere and win, you know, and so you can be 300 in the world and you have a good week and you win. And, you know.
Yeah, I hate that idea.
So that's to me, and yeah, elevated events to have the top ranked players in it, fine, but it still has to be open, etc. So that's what I think. But like, when you're looking at them, I think everyone gets media trained and they give the polished answers. And I think one of the reasons people like Rory, I'm gonna see everyone like likes to watch him play, but he'll come in and he'll be so honest. Like I think it was funny. He was having putting lessons with Brad Faxon, and he was kind of getting that sorted. But then I saw that Brad Faxon was on commentary on one of the American channels, and they didn't ask him anything. Not one time did I ask him about who he was working with, whatever. Because obviously his deal must be when he goes to commentate, listen, I have clients, I'm not speaking about them. You know, that's their business, right? So I'm sure Rory went in, yeah, I'm working with, like, he was like, read up, I'm working with Brad, looking at this. And people get into his like mind a little bit. Mm. And we have these very media trained like interviews. Oh yeah, no, you know, I'm always joking, you know, Tiger saying, oh, conditions were real tough out there, you know, and just giving the same lines. And I think we're losing that a little bit. So I think what me with Jake Knapp, it seemed like he wasn't that media trained and he just spoke what he felt and stuff. And I think, okay, I think you have a lot to be media trained because people can say things what they don't mean or they can get themselves in trouble. I get all that. But as you said, get into the honesty of more people, more players. And I think with Arnie, you kind of knew exactly what he was like in any stuff I've looked back on. And we still the personality problem. I think there is personalities. They just need to be brought out. And I'm all for letting Phil go and bringing in the Jake Knapps. And I think that's where we kind of have to go with it. Like, you know, because there's definitely, you sent me a very funny joke earlier on. I was actually laughing about DJ, about signing autographs. Oh my God. It was so outrageous. It couldn't be true. But then I was thinking about it and I was like, yeah, but it's DJ. It probably is true where he was like, you know, letting a girl know where his road and all this sort of stuff. Like she's signing her ass for nice blonde girls and stuff. Like, and I was just like, there's definitely more DJs in golf now, you know, those young lads.
Yeah.
You know, like we just need to get at them. Like, you know, and that's what we like. So I think you're dead right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Arnold Palmer, he's the king for a reason. He never even actually liked that title, I heard, but he didn't like being called the king.
He didn't even like, and you knew he backed himself, and you knew he thought he was good, and you knew he thought he could beat anyone, but there was still that, I would put that down as the historical, humble, you know, sport. I know I'm not going to be cocky and arrogant, but deep down you knew you were better than whoever you wanted to win, but there was the gentleman respect, didn't like being called that. So yeah. I think he, a really good guy with values and stuff.
Yep, very true. So yeah, on to the Players Championship this week. We'll get into that now at the last segment of the podcast, but I think we can't go on this long without talking about Matteo Manassero winning the Johnson Workwear Open in South Africa 11 years after his latest win. You were dead right. Like you were on a hot streak, I'd say, for the last few weeks. You were like, this is a tournament now where one of the older guys is going to come back. It's a great platform for one of those guys to come back and get a win and get a bit of confidence. And tell you what, I would not have picked Matteo Manassero to be the person to prove you right. But fair play, Michael. You were completely right.
Yeah, I better look back on the podcast and see if it even mentioned him. So I was running down the tee times beforehand, and I was just saying, like, oh, he brilliant, he could be good. I remember him, and I've memories of him, but I'm gonna be like, I didn't know all about the facts about his whole career until after he won. I started kind of reading stuff and listening and stuff, but like, what an unbelievable man. So, as you said, 11 years since his last one, like, he burst onto the scene, but to lose his game and then claw it back, probably, and I probably would say he's probably one of the people you really like because you respect those lads that go off and grind and get things back. And, you know, as you said, I think you have actually respect for Sergio because he tried to go qualify for the
Fabio. Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I wouldn't say Sergio, you were a massive Sergio fan, but you genuinely had the respect for the bloke who went, I'm going to go, like, if I'm good enough to qualify, I should be there. But Manasseh, I mean, like, he, I think his highest was 25th in the world. He entered this week at 381. And last year, he was playing Challenge Tour.
Yeah, and like obviously he went on and played DP World Tour, but like he went down a Challenge Tour, but like he played a couple of Alps Tour events as well. And now he won a couple of Alps Tour events, got himself onto the Challenge Tour again, but like he went far, far, far down the rankings.
Yeah, like he was very far in, and like to come back, like someone like he when he was interviewed, he said it was the best day of his life on a golf course. Now you can genuinely feel why that, like, obviously he's 25th in the world, he's played in big tournaments, and he, you know, and he's been very high up. But you can see probably the enjoyment of looking back now and going, geez, like, I grinded. Like, I'd say he's going to have this trophy sitting on his mantelpiece, and everybody goes past it, it's going to give him that grind. The grind, when I thought I was really gone and it was a really dark place, was all worth it. And has nothing to do with the check he got. Because I don't even know how low the check was, but it was a linked Sunshine Tour as well as the DP World Tour. So it when we were talking about it, it wasn't like, oh, this is set up for the season. This was DP World Tour win in his eyes, a victory at the top stage in Europe. That was just so cool.
He won €232,000 for that win, which like probably more than I expected he would make for that, to be fair. But yeah, you're dead right. It's got nothing to do with the money. It's the vindication of this is what I want to do and this is what I need to do as a career. And Matteo Manasseh winning this week is actually just like the perfect answer to Rory and Wyndham saying that the PGA Tour should be a 100-man field, because if it's 100 men in the field, week in, week out, you don't get Matteo Manasseh stories. You don't get those Jay Knapp stories like that you were talking about earlier on. And if you're to go to that 100-man field that they were suggesting, that's just live, but with a different number of players in it.
Yeah, it's exactly. So, like, and it's this European Super League stuff. And I 100% get where they're coming from. We all watch the best players play in the tournament and fight each other out. But, like, who are the best players in the world? Like, as you just said, you went on a list at the start that lads aren't very hot at the moment.
Yeah.
The most popular guys aren't that hot. So we don't really know that. Just like, isn't it? So even Manasseh, like, he stepped away from golf and he just didn't play. So he said, the toughest period of my life was when I stepped away from golf in 2019 for a few months. I literally couldn't play anymore. I couldn't swing a club. Golf had become too heavy on me.
Oof. Yeah, I can feel that.
To go from that to a win is it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. I hope that it's not just a case of we've had a good few first time winners now this season on the DP World Tour and on the PGA Tour. I hope that this isn't just a flash in the pan for Manasseh where he gets that win. Things are great for a few months, but like the grind continues. It would be great to see him back and like just competing regularly, just to make it like a nice bookended story rather than just like, cool, we got the win, we got the good win here at like a admittedly smaller DP World Tour field event. I'd love to see him kind of kick on and just do a bit more now.
Yeah, like I'd love him to, you know, be one of like a stalwart then in the DP World Tour. It would be really cool for him then to,
yeah,
but even if he stayed on the DP World Tour. And like, and, you know, and just hit the boom. That would be great to be another star back on the DP World Tour.
But even just to make himself like a character on the tour, like if he became like a Ryder Cup vice captain or something like that, or part of the background team, where like you see like loads of those videos of like Sam Torrens and lots of other previous captains talk about what it means to be like a Ryder Cup player and a European Ryder Cup player. Like Manasseh seems to just really live that as like, you know, as a proud Italian player, to have him be a big part of like the ecosystem of the DP World Tour, where like he's like the living embodiment of what it means to play on the DP World Tour and play and be a European golfer. Like it's to have people like him around for a long time would be very, very nice.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think even looking at the Molinari brothers as well. Like, you know what I mean? The way Eduardo's been in the background team, and obviously he's a really big stats guy, like someone who's like worked on the actual how to actually get not just stats but how to actually use them. And he's played in a good few tournaments now as well. So I think there's definitely something there for him within that regard.
Very true. Right. I think we move on from the professional golf for a brief minute and get on to the real golfing story of the week, of the weekend.
Yeah, the real golf.
The real golf. I played in Paris Court. So this year we were members of Paris Court, and we'll be doing a fair bit with them. We will be doing a golf day in August for 100 listeners and partners. Details on that golf day and stuff that's going to be coming up very soon. But so I played on Saturday a 13-hole competition, which is a fun little kind of fun amount of holes actually to play on a Saturday morning. Played Paris Court East Course. Got off to a rocky enough start. I posted the scorecard on Twitter and stuff like that. But then went birdie, par, eagle on 6, 7, and 8 in Paris Court. And eagle was on the hardest hole on the golf course, the 8th hole, par 4. And I was just absolutely thrilled. 150 yards out, 9 iron, straight in, slam dunk. Loved it.
Did you see it go in? Or did you hit it and you weren't sure?
No, honestly hit it, wasn't sure. It was the case of like you walk onto the green and there was another golf ball, let's say the third guy that we were playing with, and his ball was like on the back tier of the green. So you know the eighth green, it's two tier green. The pin was at the front tier, the lower tier.
Yeah.
And so his ball was up in the top tier. And I was like, oh, that's kinda weird. That's kind of where I thought my ball was. That's odd. I didn't think I'd missed the green, kind of hit a lovely 9 iron. Yeah. And he goes, have you checked the cup? I was like, well, God, no, I'm not checking the cup. Of course it's not in the hole. He's like, no, go check. Come on. Like, you gotta go check the cup. Walk over, it's in the hole. I was like, yes, let's go. Straight in. Brilliant. The pitch mark was like on the hole. So it just went, it like slammed straight into it. So I had to fix the hole. So yeah, thrilled with that. Really, really happy with that. I was just 1 point out of the points as well, which is disappointing. Out of winning a prize, 1 point away.
I think like, it's something like that. Like it, like I'd have no. If you told me that you like scratched the next hole, like I don't care. It's great. you made like the days made up. Like that was unbelievable. Like.
Yeah, I'd never. It's like I've obviously had eagles and stuff like that, but they've all been on par fives where I've reached the green in two and made a nice putt. Which actually happened on the sixth hole. I reached the green in two, lipped out for eagle, made my nice tap in birdie. But I've never holed out from the fairway or anything like that. And actually, it's on my mind recently enough. I was like, it's one of those things that I haven't done. I don't have a hole in one. Hadn't like jarred a shot from a fairway. I chipped in from around the green and stuff like that, but not from any kind of big random distance, like 150 yards. So I was like, okay, that's a nice one to kind of notch off the list as things to have done in the golf.
You've had a couple where we're both like our parties, we're both looking at it and we're not saying anything, but we're like ball flag, our eyes are like jarring up and down, and then it's like, oh. And then like it's happened a few times where we've been like, oh man, that's a tap, like it's a foot, and you get up there and you're like, it's miles, it's about 10 foot away from the box, it looks like it, half an inch. But well, that's class.
Yeah, I was very happy with it. So, like, obviously, first thing I did was I texted you and told you what happened. I was like, yes, I'm delighted.
I think it was in the kitchen. I think it was I was making the kids lunch. I was just like fist pumping in the kitchen. I was like, oh, get in.
Yeah, I was good. I'm loving the golf at the moment. Obviously, I was talking about how kind of golf at the right now is. It's more than just a game. It's good for just kind of getting out and getting a little bit of headspace and just a bit of time to myself. So enjoying it as well,
like the king says, it's like poetry to you. It's just
that's it. Yeah, it's a little bit of mindfulness and poetry. That's all wrapped into one, which is nice. And it helps when you play good golf. It's a lot harder to say golf is relaxing when you're playing terrible.
I'll let you know how relaxed I am next time I'm in the trees trying to hook out.
Yeah, you're like, Johnny, this game is so relaxing. Yeah, snap to my driver. Thank you so much. But yes, I guess so. From moving on from that to one other announcement that we have coming up, it'll be formally announced, but I guess we may as well say it here first, that the Bogeymen are partnering up with AIG Ireland. All of our coverage of amateur golf across Ireland is now going to be brought to you by AIG. They're dedicated supporters of amateur golf in Ireland. Yeah, if you get your Golf Ireland card, you're going to see like the AIG logo is going to be on your card and stuff like that. They're really, really involved when it comes to golf in Ireland. So throughout 2024, we're going to have 24 extra podcasts this year, which are going to be like tournament previews. They're going to be interviews with players in the field. So former major championship, like amateur major championship winners. We're going to have the likes of like Hugh Foley on, Rob Moore, Quinton Crew, Colin Campbell. As well from the ladies side, we'll have Sarah Byrne on, Beth Coulter, a bunch of them on for interviews and then tournament previews. And we're going to have a bunch of other kind of key personalities like Gary Murphy from Irish Amateur Info on the podcast, as well as the guys from Irish Golfer Magazine and Golf Ireland, to preview, recap, and just kind of generally discuss all of amateur golf going on in Ireland at the moment. It's a busy, busy year, not just the like regular content from or regular tournaments from like the major championships like the Close, the East, the South, all those. Like the Palmer Cup is coming to Ireland this year. The Amateur Championship is up in Ballyliffin. The Women's Amateur Championship is at Portmarnock this year. So internationally it's a very, very big year. And then obviously next year the Walker Cup is coming back to Lahinch. So it's busy all year, busy 2 years in the world of golf. So we're working with AIG and a couple of other people to bring you some really, really cool podcasts. Episode one with Gary Murphy from Irish Amateur Info is live this Thursday at 7:30 a.m. It'll be on our podcast and our YouTube streams. You can watch them there. We're also going to be live streaming the final rounds of the East of Ireland Championship, the Men's and Women's AIG Close Amateur Championship, and the AIG Cups and Shields Finals. These events will be live broadcast on our YouTube and social channels. We're going to have cameras on site. Similar to what we did at the KPMG Women's Irish Open, we're going to do live from the range, but we're also going to be bringing a camera on golf course. So you actually want to live stream the tournaments, the final rounds, the final days of those major championships. So if you can't get to those tournaments, you'll actually be able to watch the tournament live. So yeah, it's a big step for us, which is very, very exciting. So I guess with that, if you go visit aig.ie for a range of golf exclusive discounts and benefits on their products, Golf Ireland members can save an additional 10% on their car insurance, and you can enjoy some exclusive benefits when you choose AIG insurance. Kind of no matter whether you're an 18 handicap like yourself, Michael, a 6 handicap like myself, or a scratch golfer who's playing in the major championships, everyone can get that discount. Exciting times.
It is. Like, I mean, we spoke about what we wanted to look at and what different things we could do. And obviously, we talked about wanting to get as much DP World Tour stuff as well. But we kind of talked about how special amateur golf is in Ireland. And like, I don't think it's a big stretch to say it is world renowned. And you know, speaking about all the pros that have turned from McGinley to Shane to like, it's just the amateur stuff just prepares you for like so much. And we've had some unbelievable champions. And you know, speaking to Roddy Carr about his dad as an amateur and how special the Walker Cup is and how proud he's of him. So this is something that we looked at, and just it's a really kind of cool thing that we're looking at. We're really, really excited of how it's going to go, especially kind of live stream stuff. We have, like we said, the two of us love doing that stuff with the Women's Irish Open. So really looking forward to getting in and, you know, listen to some of these guys, because I haven't got enough knowledge about some of these lads, and I'm really looking forward to hearing their stories and what golf means to them. And it's just people you talk to about amateur golf in Ireland, it's just people are so passionate about it. So hopefully we can get that across in the podcasts and the shows.
Yeah, so we've recorded the first 4 episodes of the podcast. We'll be going out every 2 weeks, every second Thursday from this Thursday onwards. And in episode 1, I talked to Gary Murphy all about the season. So it's a big preview for all the different tournaments, the Irish tournaments and the international tournaments that are happening on the island of Ireland this year. But I asked him that question basically outright at the very start. And I was like, why is amateur golf in Ireland so special and so different to like places in the States or even over to the UK? Obviously the UK and Europe play a lot of team golf as well, same as we do here in Ireland, but it's much more cultural here in Ireland. You know, obviously like golf has got such a long history in Ireland, and golf is such a communal sport in Ireland, particularly in probably rural Ireland. It's grown now in urban Ireland and kind of in the Dublin area as well, but it's a similar type of relationship to the community that the GAA has, You know, it's a part of that town's identity or that club's identity is playing golf and playing golf for their team, for their club, and representing their club. And that carries through all the way up. Like, if he still talks about Paul McGinley, he still talks about how he was a member in the Grange, you know, and how that's, you know, himself and Paul Carrington grew up in Rathfarnham playing golf together, playing club competitions, playing for their college. Like, the amateur part of Irish golf is such a huge aspect of their identity, even when they go on to do pretty great things. So it's an exciting year. 2024 is going to be a big one for us from that side. Yeah, we're going to be doing lots of content around the Irish amateur game, and hopefully just kind of shine a bit more of a lens on Irish amateur stuff. Obviously, Gary Murphy and Golf Ireland and Irish Golfer Magazine do some very good stuff, and we're just trying to work with them and do a little bit more. So thank you very much to AIG for that.
Yeah, I think that podcast that I got, I've been looking at already. That if you're not that into amateur golf, or you don't know what things are or where to go, that podcast it really simply explains what it is and what to look out for. I know some people might not be, you know, familiar with everything, or what the close is, or what the east is, or where, like, what is it. That podcast will give you like an insight that you can then see into and see where they are, because you'd be surprised that I think some people don't realize how close these tournaments are, and how the golf of them is unreal, and how easy it is to get out and even watch a little bit of it or get to know some of the big players in it. So that podcast, for anyone who doesn't know too much about it, is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, thank you. Right, that'll bring us on to the last segment of this episode, Bet of the Week. This is where Michael and I put a €5 bet on the DP World Tour's action each week. It's not a crazy amount of money. We just do it for a bit of fun. So if you want to play, you want to keep track, get involved. We must say it is just a bit of fun. So please gamble responsibly. I'm going to be honest with you, it's actually not that much fun, because you were just kicking my ass. of the two people that are meant to be like the golf experts here, how are you up nearly €91 and I'm only up just €11, just past the tenner? Like, this is ridiculous. Fair play. Delighted with you.
Suggested this. I was like, oh, great. This is something Johnny's going to destroy me at, because he watches so much golf, and even like, you're always telling me, like, oh no, that course doesn't suit him. I mean, this guy's won there before. And I'm like, oh, okay, grand. I said something. You were like, no, he can't play on that golf course because of his boss. I was like, oh, okay, grand. And I'm loving this.
Like, I say you are.
Like, anyone who knows, like, I have the apps. But the minute you tell me who you are, I have favorite mine and favorite. And I'm like, in school, in between class, I've got notifications for when lads like, I'm seeing if your lad does a bogey or makes a bogey or something, I'm like, oh, beautiful. So I'm chuffed. I think it's a great idea to bring this into the podcast.
And anyway, I'd say you do love it, yeah.
I doubt there's not one person in the country that has, including my family, like, has put any of my bets on themselves. But anyone who's taken anything I've said and has made 50 cents or a euro on a bet, right? I'd love to hear from you, because I think I'm the one. I'd say every week people are like, really? Michael's gone for him again? Or him? Nah, he's not going to do it.
Yeah, you are, what, €90, 50 cent up, which is, yeah, very, very impressive. You obviously bashed Conor Sime for a top 10, including ties, finish last week at the Johnson Workwear Classic. Brought you a nice little £21. That was, unfortunately, a very good win for you. And then I had Dan Bradbury for a top 20 finish, and yeah, didn't make the cut for the fifth week out of six. He missed the cut. I thought that was going to be the week he turned it around. I could not have been much more wrong, to be honest. he didn't do great. I'm gonna be honest, he didn't do great. So I lost the fiver there, so that's not great. This week, there's no DP World Tour action, so we're going to focus on the Players Championship, what some people call the fifth major. I'm not one of those people, but
no, I wouldn't call it the. I know people say that, but I think it's a great tournament. I think it's. I love watching it. But yeah, the fifth major, not really. Yeah.
No. Okay, so considering you're leading this season long race, who have you got? What have you got?
So I think the last time we had the PGA Tour, I had JT, and he failed incredibly for me. I think my picks probably aren't great. I think I'm better at this side of the water, on the DP World Tour. So I'm going to go, because it's a big tournament, I think I think he's going to be really up for it. I'm going to go Max Homa for a top five, including ties. So that's 5-1 to return at 30 quid. I think he did okay last week. You know, it kind of tied 8 finish. Yeah, he hasn't been extremely unbelievable. He's had a little few wobbles. He's had a good couple of bogeys. He even had a double bogey the first at the Arnold Palmer. But there's a little bit of game in there, and I think he's just tweaking it. So I think this week he could come good. I'm gonna back him. Also, I think there's not many big lads in form, so I think he could be an informed one for that. So I'm gonna go a little bit. I could go top 10, but I reckon he's gonna push it and get into a top 5.
I like that, yeah. Max Homa, fair enough, fair play. I am going with Hideki Matsuyama for top 10, including ties at 11-4. So some potential returns myself of €18.75. I think I probably need to start playing a little bit more of a Hail Mary play. I need to be a bit braver if I'm to try and catch you, because if I'm making €19 bets and you're making €30 bets, I'm just never going to catch it in that sense, especially when you already have like a €80 lead on me.
Yeah, I don't know, because if I lose and you win, that happens 2 weeks in a row. It's like a double shot swing. It's like you birdieing and me bogeying. Like, you don't realize how big a jump that is.
Yeah,
because it's not match play. Do you know what I mean? It's stroke play. Yeah. So if you go, what am I giving you hints for here? If you
yeah, what am I helping you for?
Like, if you start firing at pins and drop off the back of a green, you've got an upper bunker shot.
Yeah,
and I'm just going middle, take my two putts and getting out of there. You know what, Johnny? You do what you want. Okay, I'm not going to tell you what you should do, but what I will do is get in your head. Okay, that's what probably the only thing I'm good at. Whenever we play any golf, is trying to get in your head. Are you sure that's the line to put? Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, so I'm back in Hideki. He finished tied for 12th of the Arnold Palmer. Obviously, the week before that, he won the Genesis. So I'm going for top 10, including ties. He seems to be playing with some really good golf at the moment. Seems to be very, very consistent. He's playing a lot of golf, though, is the only thing. So far this season, he has played 7 events. This is his 8th event of the calendar year since the century. So he's playing a lot of golf, but yeah, he's playing a lot of good golf at the same time. So I'm going to back Hideki Matsuyama, top 10, including ties, potential returns of €18.75. And hopefully I can just chip away at that lead a little bit. I hope Max Homa does well. I hope Max Homa does like a top 10. So I hope that he does well, but your bet doesn't land.
Yeah, you hope he comes like 6th or 7th. Yeah,
that would be great.
Like, I swear to God, like, I think I'd probably hear the shouts from around the corner. A bogey on 17 to drop him out. And I was like, you know, we're going to cut to Max Homa here with a birdie chance to just get in the top 5. And then he missed. Probably hear you screaming from down the road.
Yeah. Right. I think that might be it. When are we going to get a game of golf in, Mick?
Soon. So we need to actually. Soon. I need to. Man, you know, I don't like playing when it's wet and cold. And it's, you know, I'm a very fair weather golfer. And, you know, so even trying to coach, I'm wrapped up in mittens and snoods and stuff. It's I need those longer days and those, you know, what they say, that the 9 holes after work sort of weather. That's what we need.
Okay. Well, yeah, listen, if we're not doing anything over the weekend, we can make some Arnold Palmers, watch the players, and yeah, just take a handy over the weekend, will we? Right, thanks guys for listening. We'll see you in the next one. Like I said, new series with AIG coming out on Thursday. It's gonna be every second Thursday, so a lot of podcasts coming out over the next year, basically. Just busy one for us. So thank you. That deal with AIG wouldn't happen if it wasn't for you guys listening and watching. So yeah, hopefully we can keep going on to bigger and better things. Thank you.
On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute the millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.